time the wind blows puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
Well, as Manitoba looks forward to marking its 150th birthday next year, Gordon Goldsborough is here to tell us about how Weezer Province celebrated previous milestone birthdays. And he was here last week telling us about all the activities and fun and ways in which Manitobans did that for the centenary. And there was so much to talk about. We didn't cover everything. So Gordon is back to tell us more. Hi, Gordon.
Hi, Nadja. Yeah, there was just so much. I mean, you can talk about the parties, the commemorative license plates, the centennial babies, but there's piles more.
Okay, so where do we leave off?
Well, I mentioned that there were a number of local history books written around the province. The Centennial Corporation had supported financially the writing of at least five of them, but numerous other communities went and wrote books as well. And we'll come back to that theme a little bit later in this episode. So I just want to continue with,
yes,
you know, the various ways in which they commemorated the 100th anniversary. So,
okay, and what about buildings?
Yeah, well, they had funds from the federal government to do something to commemorate the 100th anniversary. And so they decided they were going to create something called the Centennial Center. So basically, it was going to be an area of downtown Winnipeg they were going to develop. So the flagship was the Centennial Concert Hall. But in addition to that, around it was things like the planetarium. That was done sensibly as sort of a centennial project. The Manitoba Theatre Center, the construction of it started in 1968 so that it could be ready around the time of the 100th anniversary. But the buildings weren't all focused here in Winnipeg. There was also in Brandon the Western Manitoba Centennial Auditorium that was built as a centennial project. At the International Peace Garden, they constructed a pavilion. So some major sort of signature buildings. But in addition to that, they provided funding for communities around the province. They took proposals basically from municipalities all over the place on what they would build if they had the funds. And so the Centennial Corporation approved funding. Well, I went through the records and I found that they produced 70 public parks, 7 museums, 64 recreation centers, community halls, curling rinks, skating rinks, 64 of those, 8 libraries, and a host of other facilities. You know, so around the province today, you can see all these, you know, reminders of that centennial in one form or another.
They set the bar high. Like, I'm wondering how much we can do for next year's 150th.
Well, that's true. But, you know, I'd like to think that we're up for a challenge. Manitobans are industrious people, you know, and I think if you hear about all the wonderful things, might just inspire you, you know?
What about monuments?
All over the province. And of course, I've been traveling the province, as you know, in trying to find all kinds of historic places. And in the course of my travels, I have found numerous centennial monuments, you know, either for Canada's 100th anniversary or for Manitoba's 100th anniversary or for the 100th anniversary of the municipality that I'm in. You know, and I suspect that the several dozen that I found is a severe underestimate. I don't know all the places in which to look for these monuments. So there's piles of them. But in addition to that, there was a statue of Louis Riel that was commissioned for the grounds of the legislative building. It turned out to be a little controversial. It's a little unusual. So it was later moved over to the campus of the University of St. Boniface, and it was replaced by the one that stands there today. But, you know, that statue of Louis Riel, widely regarded as the father of Manitoba, was originally commissioned as a centennial project.
Why the controversy?
It's a little unusual looking. You know, it was meant to sort of portray him as sort of a tortured person. And so it was kind of abstract looking. It wasn't sort of your traditional sort of person standing there. And I think not everybody liked that kind of approach.
Okay, so that's everything that happened for the 100th.
It wasn't even everything, but that was just sort of the highlights.
Okay, and the highlights. Dare I ask what's happening for Manitoba's 150th birthday next year?
The provincial government set up a 10-person organizing committee, and they are looking at what we're going to do next year. They've developed a logo. They have launched a website. They are seeking suggestions and input from Manitobans. And we don't know altogether what's going to happen because they haven't really announced anything yet. But there has been a wee hint of the provincial government's plans for the 100th anniversary because, you know, people may recall that last week, one of the things I mentioned is that for Manitoba's 50th birthday in 1920, they had the official opening ceremony for the legislative building. Well, of course, that means then is that next year, 2020, is the 100th anniversary of the legislature. And so just 2 weeks ago, just before it adjourned for the summer session, the Legislative Assembly passed something called the Legislative Building Centennial Restoration and Preservation Act. And the idea is that for the next 15 years, they're going to allocate a sum of $10 million each year to help restore the building. Now, of course, it's an old building. It's 100 years old. A lot of its mechanical systems are reaching the end of their natural lives. You know, there's leaks and things. You know, there's all kinds of work that must be done to preserve this magnificent building, you know, so that it can be around for another 100 years. So they've committed $10 million each year for 15 years. And then after that, $2.5 million a year in perpetuity, so that we can preserve, we can restore, we can update the legislative building. I think this is a wonderful way to mark the 100th anniversary of that building, the 150th anniversary of our province, in a way that's tangible, that you can see something as a reminder of, you know, these milestones.
What can Manitobans do then to mark the anniversary in 2020?
Well, it seems to me there are lots of things. And you know, perhaps one of the hopes that I have on doing these two episodes is to inspire people to say, you know, hey, we can do some of those things too. And I'd like to suggest that they consider something that would leave a permanent legacy, not just, you know, a short-term party, a fireworks show, a rock concert, but something that, like the legislature, leaves a long-term legacy.
What sort of legacy projects do you think would be, you know, kind of special?
Well, just a couple that I've thought of, and I'm sure people can think of lots more. But one, as I mentioned last time, how these communities have written community history books. Well, those history books are now 50 years old. You know, why not go back and update them, bring up, you know, do another history book that brings things to the present? Or now, with the benefit of new sources of information that are available, you could do a more comprehensive local history book. But a lot of communities around the province did not do a history book back in 1970. Why not remedy that omission now and do a community history book as a gift to the future? You know, that this is what our community looks like in 2020. Another is, of course, many of us carry around with us pieces of equipment that can take pictures, right?
Yeah, I've heard of these.
our phones. And, you know, so every one of us almost has the ability to document something. I thought, how would it be if, say, for on Manitoba Day of 2020, every Manitoban took a photograph that in some way captured an aspect of their lives, well, and then contributed it? Well, you'd have a collection of over 1 million photographs of Manitoba in 2020. You know, and if you could preserve these photos in some meaningful way that they would last then centuries, wouldn't that be a cool gift to future generations, that they could look back and see what was it like to live in Manitoba in 2020? And it's as easy as pulling out your cell phone and snapping a picture.
I think these are excellent ideas, Gordon, and you need to be on this 10-person organizing committee, because I agree. I think it's important that we celebrate.
And that we preserve something for the future. You know, it isn't just a party. Mm. It's things that remind people that Manitoba is a special place. You know, we are very fortunate to live here. And I think future generations should be reminded of all of the work that's been done in the past, and work like the people of the Centennial Corporation that did so much good work in 1970.
Gordon, thank you so much for this episode.
You're welcome, Nadja.
Clue for next week, please.
Well, we're going back to abandonment. Of yes. course, that's our, you know, signature.
Enough of the preserving.
Well, of course, most towns in Manitoba are a product of the railway. They were established essentially because the railway line came, and any decent town of any significant size had a railway station. Well, of course, the decline of the railway as a means of public transportation has meant that they're no longer required. And so many of them are simply gone. But there are quite a few of them left. So next week, we're going to look at the abandoned railway stations of Manitoba.
Have we done railway stations before?
We have not. Never.
I thought so.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm looking forward to it. Gordon, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba.